Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everyone. I want to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I hope we have a good connection today. I'm really not sure. I'm hearing a little bit of background noise for some reason. Interesting studying this stuff. It gets more down to earth and more practical the deeper I go into it. It's amazing. I am in the Might of Thoughts book, but I thought I would do a little bit of a re-examination of a few things quickly. First of all, Billy Meyer's 80 years old. He lives in Switzerland. He's about 45 minutes east of Zurich in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti, which is located in the pine forests and the beautiful snow-capped mountains of Switzerland. Billy's about 80 years old. He's written 50 books. And his books are written in German first, and then they're translated into some other language. And the original German has what's called an evolution code in it that deals with how the words and the letters are arranged in such a way that they actually pull information out of the storage banks of our universe. Our universe has storage banks. Our solar system, our planet, our galaxy has storage banks of information. And this information is in an energetic form, and somehow the arrangement of the German in Billy's books pulls this information out of the storage banks, and it works on your subconscious, and it helps you in your evolution in ways you're not even aware of. On the left side of a page of one of Billy's books is the German, and the right side, for example, is the English. And I've been reading, of course, in the Might of Thoughts book, particularly in page 224, and it teaches us the difference between an idea, I-D-E-A, and an ideal, I-D-E-A-L. At least from the Meyer perspective, there's a big difference. Because the idea, with no L, is an incomplete, underdeveloped thought form. And these incomplete, underdeveloped thought forms produce a kind of tangled thoughts that occur in the mind. And these tangled thoughts have a way of taking up all the room in your consciousness. So you have these unripe, incomplete, underdeveloped thoughts, and they take up all the room in your consciousness. And they push out all your virtue, they push out all your rationality, they push out all of your reason. And it leads to emotional outbursts, it leads to misdirected thoughts, and if it's taken to extreme, you can become a murderer, You can become a tyrant from these incomplete thoughts. So what we're told in the Meyer material, particularly in page 224 of my particular edition of the Might of Thoughts, we're told to think our thoughts through completely. Completely develop our thoughts. Make your thoughts ripe and mature, and then you will avoid these tangled thoughts that cause the extreme emotions. Let me read what Billy says here. He says, this is a contrast to when tangled ideas confuse the thoughts and abruptly go from one extreme to another, whereby a misdirection of the thoughts arises, which triggers emotions and can even lead to murder and manslaughter. And this is how important it is to learn to control your thoughts, because your thoughts control your future. Your thoughts are basically everything. Now, Billy's spirit form is very ancient, and it's referred to in the Meyer writings very often as Nokodamian or Nokodamjan. It'd be interesting to get a good German expert up here to pronounce that. And in Contact Report 238, on line 676, it says, Nokodamian brings rationality to his people in the Lyra and the Vega star systems. Thus he came back out of Arahat Athrasada. Well, wow, there's a lot of concepts here. First of all, Nokodamian is the first incarnation of the Meyer spirit form. And when we say Nokodamian, we're really in many ways referring to the whole line of Nokodamian and all the incarnations of that spirit form all the way down to Edward Albert Meyer. And the Meyer information explains that this spirit form came back from a spirit level. Now, there are seven evolutionary steps that human beings go through on the evolutionary ladder. And there are seven steps, you could say, on the evolutionary ladder. So when you were first incarnating, probably 4 or 5 million years ago on the Earth, assuming that you weren't a person who came on a ship even earlier, maybe 5 million years earlier, let's assume you're a native Earth human, and you started incarnating, your spirit form started to incarnate into a human body, you would start out at what's called primary life. And this is the primary development of the intellect and the consciousness. And this is primary intellectual thinking. It's cognitive thinking. It's primary cognitive functions. And it's the first stage, the most primitive stage. The second stage, which is what we're still in here on Earth, almost all spirit forms are still only in the second stage of evolution. It's called rational life. And that's the primary development of reason. We start to be able to use reason, and we start to acknowledge higher influences. We have beliefs. This is where we have religions. We have a delusional faith, a fear of evil. This is the present stage of the average Earth human being. So this is stage two. And then stage three is where we're just trying to start to move into, which is a high level of development of the intellect, where we have high technologies. Maybe some Earth human scientists are here. We have the slow breakdown of religion here. We start to acknowledge the laws of creation. We start to live in wisdom, truth, and logic here. So there's a few people starting to get into intellectual life. Now, fourth stage for human beings is called real life. And most of the Pleiaren are in stage five. Maybe a few are still in stage four. And this is where you have spiritual wisdom, spiritual knowledge, the recognition of creation and its laws. You live according to the creative laws, the creation's laws. There's a total breakdown of religious acceptances. Very interesting things happen here. We become incredible genetic engineers at this level. For example, Sannyasa's ship had a centralized computer that was biological, and it had a free will, and it literally was alive, and she could communicate to that ship telepathically. So this is, it's called real life. It's the fourth stage of evolution. So we're actually at this stage kind of creating life, which is amazing, because Sannyasa's ship was like a living being with a metallic hull. And this is what Colonel Wendell Stevens said about that in his book called, I forget what it's called. I've got one copy of it up on my shelf. It's the Pleiadian Message or something like that. He said, thus the beam ships, once finished and commissioned, became veritable living entities, having a metal and composite body and equipment and a living mind. And this exceeds the wildest imagination of our science fiction authors. And once again, confirms that truth is stranger than fiction. So that's the fourth stage. Now the Pleiaren are already in the fifth stage. And this is where they have incredible abilities in terms of their consciousness. And people get to the stage of what's called a king of wisdom or an Ishwish. And they can do incredible things with their mind. They can do telepathy, teleportation, all sorts of incredible things. Sannyasa was said to be able to burn photographs with her mind. Billy can move things with his mind, although he doesn't do that, isn't allowed to do that very often. And at this point, people become what's called the Ishwish. And at this stage, the fifth stage, we recognize spiritual peace, universal love, creative harmony. So that's the fifth stage. It's the last stage where human beings have bodies. It's the fifth stage. Now the sixth stage is called spiritual life. And at this point, we're half physical and we're half spiritual. So we start to have the disembodiment of the spirit from organic bodies. And we begin what's called the transition into creation. And this is what I'm getting to, because Nokodemian was already past this level of evolution. This Billy spirit form had millions and millions of incarnations, and it had gone through the sixth stage of evolution into the seventh stage, which can be called creation life. And the first stage of that is the level called Arahat Asada. So this spirit form, this very ancient spirit form, came back from Arahat Athrasada, this pure spiritual plane, and it came back with the intention of bringing rationality and reason back to his people, who had kind of lost their rationality and lost their reason. And his spirit form, Billy's spirit form, is supposed to be 9.6 billion years old. It's incredibly ancient, and it took on this particular task of returning to the physical in order to help speed up the evolution. Okay, let me just say this. The question also occurred to us. This is Patah speaking. So we ask Arahat Athrasada, who explained to us that Nokodemian was a creation of the planet Sadar. And it's interesting that they use the word creation there. that the spirit form seems to be linked to the planet it was on, which was in the Warren Sun System, which moved in the Lyran Galaxy, which is, was about 3 billion light years from the Earth. It's incredible. So the reason I bring that up is what Nokodemian came back to do was to bring rationality to his people and to teach them in thought forms which are complete, which are mature, which are developed. And these are the ideal, I-D-E-A-L, thought forms. Because only rationality and virtuelessness govern in highly emotional forms. So again, if you're thinking, and you're thinking in terms of an idea, I-D-E-A, then you're thinking in an incomplete, underdeveloped thought form, which tends towards high emotion and can lead to emotional outbursts. Let me read this again. This is in contrast to entangled ideas, confuse the thoughts, and abruptly go from one extreme to another, whereby a misdirection of thoughts arises, which triggers emotions and can even lead to murder and manslaughter. Now, when we have unripe, incomplete, underdeveloped thought forms, it pushes all the room out of our consciousness for rationality and virtue. And we have these thoughts, which Billy refers to as ideational thoughts, and this leads to a kind of virtuelessness and highly emotional situation in which, and here's the other interesting thing, when we think in terms of these underdeveloped thought forms, these incomplete thought forms, we can't set as a, what's called a tzil or a zeal, which is a life determination, a culmination point. Only complete thought forms can play into the tzil or the setting of the zeal, because the tzil is related to your evolution, where the IDEA will never go towards your evolution. Let me read something here that might make this a tad clearer, if I can, assuming I can find it. I'm not seeing it here handy. But anyway, these ideas can lead to this rotation of the thoughts. And these rotating thoughts trigger emotions. Let me pick up here. Therefore, a murderer or despot, for example, only pursues his or her unripe ideas, from which he or she is never able to make an ideal, I-D-E-A-L. Remember, an ideal with an L is a mature, complete, developed thought form. And the person that's thinking in terms of an IDEAL is not able to have a ideal thought form. Let me continue. Therefore, a murderer or despot, for example, only pursues his or her unripe ideas, from which he or she is never able to make an ideal, that is to say, a healthy, positive determination, because he or she remains caught up in the IDEA and does not come free of it. But IDEAS, ideas, are incompletely developed factors, which must first be thoroughly contemplated and work through in order to recognize and correspondingly handle the values or the unvalues in them. So we need to, again, think through our thoughts completely to form the ideal, I-D-E-A-L. And when we can do that, we can have healthy thoughts. We can have peaceful thoughts. We can have productive thoughts. Otherwise, our thoughts are these tangled, confused things that can lead to the disruption of our thoughts, or the disruption and the triggering of emotions. I am a little concerned about the background noise. Are you guys getting a real bad background noise? I don't know. I'm almost wanting to play a little something and then try to reconnect. Sometimes Blog Talk doesn't do well when you try to reconnect. So if you guys can handle the background, I'm hearing a little hiss. But if you guys can handle that, I'll continue to push forward. So again, we're reading the Billy Meyer material here. Billy Meyer is a man in Switzerland. He's 80 years old. He's written about 50 books, most of which are all originally written in German and then translated later into other languages. He grew up even farther north in Bulak, Switzerland. And around 1943, he started to get telepathic messages from an extraterrestrial human named Svoth, who would land his strange pear-shaped craft in Switzerland in the Bulak area near the village of Niederflux, up around the Eichenmoser and Bruder Mountains. Svoth would land a strange silvery pear-shaped craft into clearings in the field. He would send a telepathic message out to young Edward Albert Meyer, who lived nearby. And Billy would come out to the ship, and then some kind of energy would pick up young Edward, pull him into the ship, and the ship would take off, and it would go off into Earth orbit. And Svoth would teach Billy. And one of the first things he would teach Billy is about his previous lives. And Svoth taught Billy that he had been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad in his previous lives. And that he taught this ancient and universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit. And that's what I've been talking about a little bit today. Some of the teaching of the spirit that's discussed in the Might of Thoughts book, the Mach der Gedanken book. And really, in the biggest, highest level, this book is teaching us how to think like the universal consciousness thinks, to think in a neutral, positive form. Now, I just said something that's partially not true, because the universal consciousness, my understanding is, the superintelligence which runs our universe doesn't really think the way we look at thinking. It's a super intellect. It's a spiritual energy. In the German, it's called a Wesenheit, meaning that it's completely neutral positive. It's neither good nor evil. It creates universes as a part of its own evolution. And it creates human spirit forms as a part of its own evolution. It creates planets and plants and animals who all have spirit forms as a part of its own evolution. So our spirit form, which is residing in the center of our brain, in the middle of our brain, in an area called the superior colliculus, is said to be a tailstock or a fragment of this universal consciousness. Now, these extraterrestrials, these Pleiaren extraterrestrials, have the ability to look at spirit forms to identify them. And Svoth, as a very advanced extraterrestrial human, had a kind of technology, and he knew where this very ancient spirit form was going to incarnate as a small boy in, I think, 1939 or 1940. It incarnated in this little boy. It was going to grow up as a teacher. And these Plearen have studied this spirit form as it has reincarnated over the centuries. And it has been, again, the people that we call Enoch, which they call Henoch, which there were actually four Henochs. It's a long story. As Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, who many people call Jesus today, and then Muhammad, this spirit form also incarnated as Rasputin in Russia before it incarnated in Billy. Billy's prior incarnation was a man named Rasputin, who was a mystic healer in Russia. And I think there are a lot of untrue information out there about Rasputin. You can look at some documentaries. He was kind of a wild man, according to some information sources. I don't think a lot of that's probably true. Before Rasputin, this spirit form incarnated as, I believe, Aristotle, Socrates, Mendelssohn, Mozart, many other different individual personalities. See, our spirit form incarnates with different personalities during each physical incarnation. So each lifetime is different. So each lifetime we get a different perspective on life in general. And we also grow and learn better looking at things from different perspectives. Now, Edward Albert Meyer is a man in Switzerland who basically writes books. He kind of farms. He's had these extraterrestrial contacts since he was a very, very young age. Svoth met with Billy until about 1953. He taught Billy for 11 years, taught him many things. One of the things he would tell Billy when he would take him up in his ship and explain to him some of the historical trends that were going to take place on the Earth. He told Billy that there would be two atomic bombs dropped on Japan. He told Billy that the people of the Earth would become indolent and obtuse, slow to understand, unwilling to put forth the effort to learn. He was told and warned not to get involved with materialism, that the people of the earth are very, very materialistic. Also, Svoth told Billy that everything in the universe is one and it's all bound together. Now, this is an interesting concept and something that is a little bit worth paying attention to, because one of the creational natural laws is the law of love. It's not romantic at all. It's a love based on reverence. I often say it's kind of the love you feel for your cat or your dog or your child if you have a child. It's not romantic at all. It's very stable. And it's the kind of love that should and does last a whole lifetime. Billy Meyer writings explain it this way. He says, love is the highest principle in all creation, and through it everything exists in absolute logic. So the reason things exist, period, is because of the love of creation. Without the love of creation, nothing would be able to exist. Creation, again, is this Wesenheiten in the German, a living intelligence, a spiritual energy that pervades everything, that's neither good nor evil, it's neutral, but it radiates love. Just like the sun radiates light and heat, this super intelligence radiates love, not like a father or not like a mother, though. Let me say it's more neutral than that. When we love, we're not so neutral. But the universal consciousness is neutral because it sees things from the perspective of eons and eons and eons. And it knows that, well, if this lifetime you die, next lifetime you won't be so likely to make that same mistake. So it doesn't interfere. It doesn't save you from yourself. We live these physical incarnations to develop wisdom and knowledge and responsibility and evolve our consciousness. And one of the best ways to evolve your consciousness is to learn how to think correctly, which is neutral positive thinking. That means you're not real positive, and you're certainly not negative. Neutral positive thinking is optimistic, it's confident, it's relaxed, it's cheerful, it's enthusiastic, it's satisfied. This is the neutral positive perspective, but it's realistic because it knows that the negative and the positive are two forces which belong together and should never be separated because one depends on the other. So when you separate and try to push the negative out of your life, you become what's called a Sartung in the German. You get out of control. You no longer have the healthy, good nature of a human being. You become a tyrant, or as this particular verse says, a murderer. Therefore, a murderer or despot, for example, only pursues his or her unripe ideas, for which he or she is never able to make an ideal. That is to say, a healthy, positive determination, because he or she remains caught up in the idea and does not come free of it. But ideas are incompletely developed factors, which must thoroughly be contemplated and worked through in order to recognize and correspondingly handle the values or the unvalues in them. So somewhere in here in the next page or two, it talks about rotating these incomplete thoughts. We rotate or repeat these incomplete thoughts, and they kind of take control of us. So we need to be careful that we don't do that. Now, there's a few related concepts I want to throw out real quick on the word IDEA, which you German experts out there would, there's a pronunciation for that, different than the way English does. For example, one idea that's, again, not a completely worked out thing that's being planted into the consciousness of the people of the earth is this whole idea of fear of extraterrestrials and fear that we're going to be invaded by extraterrestrials. This is part of the operation of the global elite, and this is one of the ways they want to control us through fear. So let me continue here. This is from Contact Report 257. And so the population should be left in ignorance about the truth of the existence of extraterrestrials. Nevertheless, however, that fear must be developed in the peoples against extraterrestrials, out of which a far-reaching hate must be established against the invaders. So this is what the evil machinations of the elite, the hidden hand, the people that control all the governments of the world are building us towards, this fear and hatred of extraterrestrials. And let me continue. And thereby, once again, a defensive rage steered by hate should result. The U.S. presidency, as well as the leading officers of the military and the The Secret Services came upon the psychologically sophisticated IDEA. Again, the idea to work out a horror scenario in extraterrestrial matters and to start it in such a way that not only America would be seized by it, rather all the rest of the world. And this is Contact 257 describing the long-awaited extraterrestrial false flag invasion that we were actually warned about by Wernher von Braun, an invasion which will really be a hoax that comes from our own militaries around the world. Our militaries have technologies which are much more advanced than the public realizes, which will play the role of the invading aliens. So for years now, the movie industry has been planting the notion in the mind of the public that there are these negative ETs wanting to invade the Earth. The biggest worry we should have is our own governments, which are very, very corrupt. And one of the defenses that we must develop is what's called the Lebenskraft. It is our life force. And on page 224 in The Might of Thoughts, it says, therefore, it is necessary to search for the source of the life power and to develop the power in order to have a reliable life potential upon which one can depend. The source of the life power, which must be created by oneself, lies in the consciousness, that is to say, in the thoughts, which must be formed, tended, and nurtured in such a way that they correspond to a progressive zeal for life, an ideal with an L. So let me step back a little bit. Our thoughts produce feelings. The feelings grow out of the thoughts. Emotions don't grow out of thoughts. Feelings grow out of the thoughts, and there's a difference. Feelings are more rational. Feelings should be allowed to develop. Emotions are unrational. They're irrational, and they explode upward. So good thoughts produce good feelings. And good thoughts and good feelings produce good habits. And good habits produce good circumstances in your life. So what you think, you make real. You are the master of your own destiny. You are the forger of your fortune. You are the creator of your own good luck. Your good thoughts and good feelings create good habits and good circumstances. You are the master of your own destiny. Your thoughts are like a garden filled with flourishing plants. You have all kinds of good thoughts, and you need to take control of your life. And the way you do that is by taking control of your thoughts and producing complete thoughts that are ripe, that are completely developed, that are totally thought through. And when that happens, your thoughts start to have what's called a zeal, a life determination, and they start to play a role in the evolution of your consciousness. And we are told to search for the source of our life force, which is in our deep thoughts. And our thoughts must be designed and nurtured and maintained. See, we nurture good thoughts. We clarify good thoughts in such a way that they will eventually provide us with a zeal for life, an ideal. And we are told to search for the source of the life power, the Lebenskraft. That means we literally have the ability to enhance our own life power. And in Contact Report 39, the word Lebenskraft is used. Let me continue. Then the case is indeed clear. There's something else, however, that you should explain for everyone for the interest of our cause, namely the connections or certain connections with the age of the earth human being. I already know about these things because Thoth informed me, this is Billy speaking, about them when I was a boy. Nevertheless, these things were never written down, so others aren't oriented about them. I'm referring to the fact that the mental forces of every single human being are capable of raising or lowering the life forces of others. So your good, healthy, neutral, positive thoughts can raise your own life force and raise the life force of others. Because the thinking of a life form through the operation of the spirit produces an extremely logical creation-related force that is released as high-frequency vibrations and radiations, a tremendous force that when it's produced can influence everything. So your good, healthy thinking, think back love to creation. You can influence everything. At the earliest times, when the human being of the earth was also produced by his indirect ancestors, his average lifespan was 1,007 years. And this is back when we were still influenced by these extraterrestrials. They trained us, they informed us, they possessed an enormous level, and it influenced our lifespan. But our religions here on earth have depleted our life force. They have shortened our lifespan. And this is talked about in what's called the OM, or the OM, which is another one of Billy's writings. It says there, everything that the human inherits, everything that he brings with him through the billionfold existence of the past, everything that he enjoyed, knew, read, learned, or experienced in this or in past lives, lies concealed in the unconscious. So your unconscious has tremendous power. Therefore, why does he not master the technique of concentration? Why does he not order his unconsciousness and make full use of his knowledge and ability? Now this is what the OM says. It says, for this, it is required that we must first fight our own stupidity and acknowledge that the material intellects constitutes no human if it does not also in the same measure work together with the spiritual intellect. So we have two intellects, so to speak. We have a material consciousness and a spiritual consciousness. The spiritual consciousness is controlled by what's called the Gemut. The spiritual consciousness is also called your innermost creational personality. It's related to your spirit form and all the wisdom, the combined wisdom of all your previous lives. Your material intellect is who you are today. And the material intellect is somewhat threatened by your spiritual consciousness. So as you evolve, you'll also have a certain level of threatened. Your material consciousness will continue to be threatened to a certain degree because this gigantic monster of information in your unconsciousness starts to be revealed. And your material consciousness wants to stay in control. And it's sometimes called the false self or the rat self. And it's fundamentally threatened by your spiritual consciousness. See, your material intellect is for this lifetime, really only for this lifetime. And when you die, your spirit form will take your material intellect with it into the spirit realm. and your material intellect will be placed in like a storage bank called the overall consciousness block. And then everything that you learned in this lifetime will be reduced down to its essence. You'll have an essence related to logic, an essence related to confidence, an essence related to love, an essence related to logic, to perseverance, to all these different things. And what happens in the spirit realm in between lifetimes is that whatever you learned in the previous life that's a value is distilled down into its essence, and it's absorbed by the spirit form. And each lifetime makes the spirit form wiser, and it makes it stronger. And this is the function of all of these incarnations. It's why we go through all of these incarnations. Now, Billy's spirit form, as we said, was very ancient, and that's why the Pleiaren contacted him, because they wanted to. They knew that this particular lifetime would be extremely important, because all of that knowledge and wisdom is being written down in these 50 books. And that's why Svaf first visited Billy back in 1943 and started his mentoring process, which lasted 11 years. Well, in 1953... A robotic craft landed on a hillside in Switzerland, and that robotic craft was sent there by a woman named Askett. And Askett was going to be Billy's next mentor, and Askett would mentor Billy from about 1953 until about 1964. And Billy had climbed up this hill, and he was a little sweaty, and it was rather chilly that evening. And he saw this strange craft descend out of the sky that had this strange tripod landing system. And it landed on top of this hillside, and Billy walked over to it, and this hatch opened up. And he said it felt as if he'd been picked up by ghostly hands, and he was brought into the ship, and he realized it was a robotic craft. There was no one else in there, so he sat down in the one chair that was available, and the craft lifted off the ground, and it became invisible, and Billy couldn't even see the craft. He's floating in midair, and then the next thing he notices, he can't see his own body. There's kind of a flash of light, and the craft starts to hover, and it goes over the village where Billy lives, and it hovers over his house where he grew up, and then it takes off in a flash, and it's zooming very high into the air, and Billy can see the Indian Ocean, and he can see the sun reflecting off the Indian Ocean, and he can see the golden disk of the sun in a night sky, and he can see stars. He sees the tremendous stars everywhere. And the craft starts to eventually descend, and it lands in a country called Jordan. And Billy can look around, and he can see these red rocks and this red sand. And he steps out of the craft, and out of the sky comes what looks like a falling star that gets larger and larger and larger, and there's this gigantic 300-foot disk, and it lands there in the Jordanian desert and doesn't do anything for like a half an hour. And slowly, a woman steps out that's very beautiful and very striking, very human-looking, dressed in kind of a silvery garb that almost looks like a dress. And Billy gets all of these memories, these strange memories these feelings start to come over him when he sees her. He feels as if he's missed her very intensely in this lifetime. Of course, he hasn't even met her yet in this lifetime. And they talk a little bit. And Billy brings up, why do I know you? How is it that I know you? And she says, I can't tell you that, but you'll have to search your memories for that. So they both go into her ship, and they fly to what Billy calls the strange animal human statue on the Giza Plateau. And the craft lands, and it kind of cloaks itself and becomes invisible. Billy and Askett step out of the ship, and she puts a device on his belt, and she has a similar device on her own belt, and they both become invisible. They can still see each other, but no one else can see them. And they walk down like a hillside to the Giza Plateau, and there's some women in tents nearby. And Billy sneaks into these tents, and he's playing some little games in there where he'll kiss one of them on the cheek. And, of course, they can't see him at all. And they all think that they're being kissed by angels. And it's a very strange part in this whole contact report, which is otherwise very serious and very intense. But they both eventually leave that area, and they go into these ancient passageway, these dark hallways, and they travel far below the Giza Plateau, thousands and thousands of feet, and they eventually get to this giant rock, which is part of this wall, and it's referred to in the contact reports as an ashlar. And some way Askett has the ability, through some technology, to this rock kind of dematerializes right in front of them, and they both walk through into this hallway, and then the rock rematerializes behind them. And Billy is in the hallway, this inner gigantic room of what's called the Giza Intelligences, which were a very ancient extraterrestrial group that had splintered off of the Pleiaren. These extraterrestrials that Billy has contact with are called the Pleiaren. The Pleiaren live in a star system some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in what's called a different space-time configuration. They visited the Earth, and there were actually civilizations in our ancient past. Civilization started about 133,000 years ago, the civilization of Atlantis, which was really an extraterrestrial civilization. And before that, there was a civilization that was led by a man named Pelagon, which was also an extraterrestrial civilization. So a lot of these giant structures, like the Great Pyramid, were built in these very, very, very ancient times. The Maya material says the Great Pyramid is 73,000 years old. The old cubical constructions below it are 73,000 years old. And Askett and him are in a hallway looking at ancient spacecraft, one of which is gigantic. And they can see these guards all around this ancient hallway. And they're strangely garbed. And Billy sees one little plateau area to the right where he sees what looks like a Y-shaped cross. He sees a staff. He sees a leather pouch with precious stones in it. He sees blood-encrusted nails. He sees a crown of thorns. He sees all these Christian relics, and he doesn't quite know what to think because he grew up in a very Christian atmosphere. And eventually, when they leave, Askit explains that this extraterrestrial group, known as the Giza Intelligences or the Befoth, had been using religion to control the people of the Earth, and they had leaders, very warlike, very vicious, brutal dictators who demanded worship in the ancient past here on the Earth. And as, even though it's a very controversial statement, the Meyer material says that the man in our Old Testament who is called Jehovah was actually one of these extraterrestrials of the Giza Intelligences who ruled during that time and used his technologies and his incredible power associated with his material consciousness to rule the people of the Earth in this dictatorial way. And when the Jews were going through the Middle East and wiping out so many of these other people, this was all part of this. The Giza Intelligences wanted to rule the world. And they had a couple different plans that they were working on to try to do that. They were still on the Earth in the late 1970s, according to Meyer material. They didn't actually leave the Earth, I think, until 78 or something like that. They had attacked Billy several times. They used what were called telenotic impulses to control our thinking, and these telenotic impulses somehow still affect us in some strange and unusual way. But now the people of the Earth are free of this extraterrestrial influence. So we've been under kind of a disadvantage for many reasons in terms of our evolution. Particularly, we have a genetic problem, which shortens our lifespan and makes us more likely to be aggressive. And this is also something that was worked into our genetic makeup, not by the Giza Intelligences, but even in the farther ancient past, by a group of extraterrestrials that lived in the Sirius system who created a human race that had a shortened lifespan and a propensity for violence. And particularly, we lash out when our consciousness is overburdened. And that's another reason why it's so important to look at the mind of thoughts, to be constantly monitoring your thought processes, so that you do not strike out when your consciousness is overburdened. This is actually part of this genetic defect that was engineered into us intentionally. Anyway, covered a lot of material this afternoon, and we've been primarily studying the spiritual teachings of Edward Albert Meyer in one of his books called Macht der Gedanken, The Might of Thoughts. Hope you've enjoyed the show. I've enjoyed bringing it to you. I hope we will be doing the same kind of thing tomorrow. Remember, take control of your thoughts. Be neutral, positive. Stay in control of your thoughts. Be confident. Be optimistic. Be relaxed. Be cheerful, enthusiastic, and satisfied. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.